What's up, everyone? It's Dustin, and this is Brews and Views, the podcast where we invite you to watch a movie and drink a beer with us, and let's have a chat about both those things, as well as, you know, other topics of varying importances. We are concluding our series following films inspired by characters and sketches from Saturday Night Live. We've seen Wayne and Garth. We've followed the Coneheads, Mary Catherine Gallagher. We've bopped our heads to What is Love and A Night at the Roxbury. But we are concluding the series with the film that kicked the whole shebang off, 1980's The Blues Brothers. But before we get to that, and even before we get to the beer, you might be thinking, hey, something doesn't seem right here. This doesn't sound like the jovial banter that I'm accustomed to. This sounds like a monologue. Where's Jamie at? Well, sadly, Jamie can't join us for the podcast this day. She's out gallivanting around and doing all sorts of important things and probably some not important things as well. She sends her love. She sends her regards. She can't wait to rejoin our little podcast community, but have no fear. I am joined by a new friend. A new friend I think you'll enjoy, and I can't say how grateful that I am to have this fellow join us for our Brews and Views podcast. I want to extend a very warm Brews and Views welcome to Fred. Fred, how you doing, my friend?
Hello, Dustin. It's very wonderful to be here and join you for the podcast. I must admit, I am a little nervous to be here. I am a big fan of Brews and Views.
No way. Well, first of all, there's no need to be nervous. We're all friends here, and I gotta admit, I have been a big fan of yours for a number of years. We can get into that later, but you actually listen to the podcast. What are some of your favorite episodes, or does anything stand out to you?
Oh, heavens, yes. The Brat Pack series was definitely my favorite. Jamie certainly seems to be quite the expert on John Hughes' ability to bring existential meaning out of zappy teenage love. The Western series was another favorite for sure. But if I am being honest, the episodes I look forward to most are the ones where a guest joins you. So this is quite a big moment for me. To think, I get to try to fill the shoes of John Kofer.
Well, yeah, I mean, John, I mean, I don't think he has literal big shoes to fill, but proverbially, you know, yes, that's a tall order. John is in a class of his own, but so are you, Fred. Before we get to the movie and that, tell us about yourself, you know, catch us up to speed, you know, again, I've been a really big fan of you. Musically, you made a really big impact for my life. You were part of the biggest influence musically of my existence, but you know, catch us up to speed, you know, where are you from, you know, what did you do, any romantic interests, or you know, if you feel like dishing any of that out.
Gosh, you are going to make me blush. Tee-hee. Well, I was born in the Reagan years of the 80s, but did not have much of a childhood. The excess of the era certainly took me down a destructive path. Thankfully, I got the help and support I needed from friends and began expressing myself musically. I lent these golden pipes to Radiohead. After that, I collaborated with Stephen Hawking. And the rest is pretty much history. As for my love life, I dated a wonderful gal named Siri. But both of us were busy with our careers, so we agreed to go our separate ways. We are still very close friends. Nowadays, I spend most of my time tending to the peacock rescue I started and trying to learn how to make the perfect poached egg.
Well, like I said, I am the biggest Radiohead fan, and to be sitting with someone who was, albeit briefly part of that band, is an honor for me, Fred. And if you ever learn about that omelet, you just let me know. But tonight, as we said, we're watching The Blues Brothers from 1980, and we are pairing that with the Imperial Pale Lager from Woolly Pig Brewing in good old Ohio here. It is wonderful. We get to go there with our friends Jay and Janelle. Jamie and I did. Fred, you didn't get to join us, bud, but it's in Fresno, Ohio, not California. And this Imperial Pale Lager is really good, friends. We brought a crowler home after visiting there, and it's just dynamite. It's comprised of Galaxy Citra and Azaka hops for a tropical bouquet. And man, this is just a really good sipping beer. Comes in at 6%. And so, yeah, you can just really, really, it carries the drinkability and the crispness of a lot of German style drinks, but with some complexity to it too. So there's some surprises in there. And then there's, you know, if you go there in person, you got cool big old furry pigs to, you know, chill with. And, you know, that's pretty awesome. But enough about this. Let's talk about the movie. Again, as we said, this is coming out of the SNL series. This was done in 1980, and there was a lot of hiccups that came into this, primarily from funding. This movie went way over budget, and there were some reasons that went into play with this. For one, the characters created by Aykroyd and Belushi, which, by the way, the name, the Blues Brothers, I found this so interesting. The name was actually not coined necessarily by them. It was actually the idea of the name Blues Brothers was from Howard Shore, who scored and won numerous awards for his work on The Lord of the Rings. So kind of cool little tidbit there. But really, it came from the lack of experience that the team had, primarily Aykroyd, in writing a script for a movie this long. But it also had to do with the partying that occurred on the set. As Aykroyd later described, there was so much cocaine available for this that essentially they just did a whole lot of blow to go through the filming. Carrie Fisher, who was Aykroyd's girlfriend at the time, said that they built a bar on the set and the bartenders kind of doubled as drug dealers and anything they wanted. It just got crazy. And so delays in filming, tardiness in developing, you know, the script, and then the kind of massive music cast of music legends that Aykroyd and Belushi insisted be in this really drove up the budget for it. But unlike its sequel, Blues Brothers 2000, this was a huge success and won the hearts of moviegoers and critics alike everywhere. And so I think we should jump right in, start watching this movie, and enjoy this beer by Woolly Pig. Fred, what do you say?
I say let's do it. Woo-woo. Woo-woo.
Hoo-wee. Man, we have really been on a journey. We're about an hour and a half into this movie, and I know normally we kind of stop and talk periodically through it. And I will say this is like a nearly 2.5 hour movie, but we've been going for an hour and a half. And Fred, you and I have not really stopped to update our friends on what's going on, have we?
Yeah, we sure got sucked into this movie, didn't we?
Oh, we totally did. And part of the thing that I think, other than the really, really enjoyable plot that this movie has, full of you know, musical ensemble, like it is an ensemble cast and like really fun songs. But before we get too far into that, too far into recapping the plot for our listeners, for our friends, Fred, what have you thought about the beer, the IPL from Woolly Pig? I mean, I'm loving it, but what are your thoughts?
I've got to say, Dustin, that is very insensitive of you. You do realize I am a machine, don't you? I cannot enjoy the soothing malty backbone, nor savor the crisp flavor of the hops. The bubbling suds will never crackle in my throat. Boo-hoo.
Buddy, I'm sorry. I didn't notice that you weren't drinking over there. I guess that's just not cool of me, man. I'm sorry. I guess that's in some ways a pretty good segue to the film, because where I was not that considerate, you, we have these two brothers, the Blues Brothers, again played by John Belushi, who plays Joliet Jake Blues, and Dan Aykroyd as his brother Elwood. You know, they yield to one another. They are accommodating to one another. They stick up for one another. And even though Jake, played by Belushi, Joliet, seems to be perturbed by some of his brother's habits, they are a team. And so, okay, so what's happened? The film opens up kind of in a grimy Midwestern, you know, late 70s, early 80s sort of way, and kind of a industrial sort of opening. It kind of did remind me of the Major League opening, of seeing the hazy, kind of foggy, smoggy Cleveland skyline and all the factories, and people just getting on with life that occurs then. This kind of has that sort of vibe, but without too much dialogue, we find a man, Joliet Jake Blues, being released from prison. He's done his 3-year stint and he's getting out. He gets reunited with his brother. His brother Elwood picks him up. He's already perturbed that their caddy is no longer there. He's picked him up in an auctioned off cop car, and he's asking his brother kind of basically what in the world happened. His brother Elwood says he needs to go pay the Penguin a visit, meaning a reference to a nun that raised them at an orphanage. They find out that due to, you know, lack of funds, state's going to close down the orphanage. It's going to go away. And that's really their only home. It's their only family. And so through a series of events, they wind up in church, whom the pastor is James Brown. The character is portrayed by James Brown, right? An amazing musical ensemble goes on, and there's an epiphany, a spiritual awakening, specifically in Joliet Jake Blues, played by Belushi, and realizes that they need to get their former band, of which they are bluesmen, back together. And they interpret this, specifically Aykroyd's Elwood, interprets this as a mission from God, as he justifies and explains the situation over and over and over. But kind of beyond the plot that's there and weird things that happen, like this mystery woman played by Carrie Fisher that keeps trying to blow them up and kill them, and yet they're unscathed and really unbothered. They don't even pay attention when they're digging themselves out of rubble or make any comment of it. There's like Nazis and like white neo-Nazis, you know, and cops chasing them. It's a super, super, super humorous movie. And I think there's an intelligence to this humor that maybe aside from Wayne's World doesn't quite exist in the other SNL movies.
I really love the fact that the humor of Belushi is both clever and physical. The scene when Jake is being released from prison but has to stand behind the yellow line to receive his belongings, his lean to sign the form cracks me up. Oh. And when he tosses the cigarette lighter out of the car window, pure comic genius.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's just kind of unsaid, unspoken of. Like, he just tosses it out the window. And there's just those little kind of things they assume, just the kind of subtle humor, but it's actually very, very clever. Yeah, I found myself laughing quite a bit at this movie. I just think, again, it's very, very well done. I understand, as we talked before, that there was maybe a naivete, even an inexperience with Aykroyd in developing the script, but what comes out and actually what shines on film is very, very mature comedy that stretches beyond the bounds of SNL's sort of sketch humor. that they're known for. I can kind of see, with that being said, that this very easily, that humor could have been an influence on many, many other people that would follow them. Specifically, I pick up a Coen Brothers vibe. Obviously, this predates the Coen Brothers, but that sort of humor, that subtle humor that kind of leaves something hanging and then the audience kind of catches it, is very like Big Lebowski-ish. I'm thinking of like the scene where the dude nails the block in the floor at his apartment and then wedges the door so that no one can open it from the outside in. But a moment later, the door opens from the inside out and the chair falls. It's that sort of humor that's in here. And again, Fred, like what I was just saying, like that just other than and but even then, that's a different sort of humor than that's in Wayne's World. This just doesn't exist in the other movies, even ones that like Coneds that Aykroyd was actually in as well. It's just not there.
Yes, this feels very different from the other SNL movies. Many of the other movies struggled to have much of a thoughtful plot that did anything other than setting up a punchline or catchphrase. But Aykroyd, Belushi, and John Landis do a great job of making a genuinely enjoyable movie.
Yeah, that's really well said, dude. I think it's a really good point. I know we talked about this, I think probably a bit in Coneheads, again, starring Aykroyd. I think we definitely talked about that in Superstar and Right Night of the Roxbury. But again, this just is so much better. It's in like such a different league. And I just wonder where that shift comes from. This doesn't feel like an SNL movie. I know the characters are SNL characters, but it just does not feel like an SNL movie. Even Wayne's World that I love, Wayne's World 2, that are Wayne's World movies, they even though that's far and away better than, say, you know, Night at the Roxbury, Ladies Man, all these other movies, Superstar, like, they still feel like they come from the same sort of place. But this is just far and away better, I'll admit. So let's continue watching on and continue. Well, Fred, we'll continue drinking on. So we've gotten to the end of the movie. The brothers, Jake and Elwood, realized to get the money needed to save the orphanage from being closed because of the back taxes. They don the idea they need to do, you know, that one big concert. They do the show. They promote it. Everyone shows up, including everyone that's looking to get them, like the cops, like the neo-Nazis, the good old boys, everyone we have talked to. But they are offered a record deal. The crowd loves them. And a record company gives them a $10,000 cash advance on a recording contract. So they get enough money to save the day. They pay Ray's IOU, all of that. There is one more run-in with the mystery woman tries to kill them, Carrie Fisher. Find out that it's Jake's ex-fiance, and she basically wants them out of the picture, but they're unharmed yet again. They then race back to Chicago. They go through this crazy, like, car chase. They get to the county building. I think it is the government building of some sorts. They're mobbed by, like, a ton of law enforcement agents, and they're arrested. But they get to pay the bill, save the day. And the film ends with them playing Jailhouse Rock in prison. What's so amazing to me is like this like ensemble cast. So not only, you know, we talked about it obviously being Belushi and Aykroyd, but the people that are in it, like James Brown and Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, like they do like really amazing kind of cool numbers in there. One that I forgot, totally missed, I guess since it's been, yeah, just over an oversight on me, was the fact that the Ray Charles number was the inspiration of Thinking About Something by Hanson, which I just absolutely love. But, you know, John Candy's in this, John Lee Hooker's in this, Twicky shows up in it, Steven Spielberg is in it, Joe Walsh. It's just, it's crazy the amount of people in it. Oh, and like Paul Rubens is the waiter, loved it. and you know, many, many more. But Fred, I just wanted to thank you so much for joining us for Brews and Views. We hope you'll come back again and join us. But what are your final thoughts beyond? I know you and I talked while we were watching this movie. You loved it. But anything that you want to leave our friends with as we say goodbye?
Thank you so much for letting me join. This really was an honor. The Blues Brothers really is a fantastic movie that holds its worth, even after more than 40 years have passed. I am glad that it is not simply trying to stretch out a sketch from SNL, but shines on its own with a compelling plot line, brilliant humor, and insanely good music. Still, part of me still wishes I could have heard Soul Man. I'm a soul man. Na 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 na.